So we're Tes Zayin of Aleph, six lines down in the middle of lines, middle-sized lines, Amr of Yosef. So in the previous Gemara, we had a three-way machlokas between the Rabbanon, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Yosef, is that correct? So we had a three-way machlokas. How often are people judged? You know, how often are we evaluated? In education, this is a big question as well. So I teach eighth grade, right? So in the olden days, you had a test every month, every 3 weeks, and like that was it, right? So the new approach to testing is that you don't test every month, because let's say a kid falls behind, and then they get to the test, they're 3 weeks behind. There's no way for them to catch up. So instead, you test them more often. So in fact, like the most progressive ways of testing is actually not to test them at all. Because
when I was in school, I loved that.
What does that mean? You don't give a test. Right. You give evaluations often, twice a week, three times a week. I told my students, I say, I don't give any tests the whole year. There are no tests. But you have quizzes every week. So it's the same thing. Well, it's less material because it's at the end of the week or the beginning of the next
Albert
week.
Albert Einstein Medical School was built on that basis.
They what?
That's the way Albert Einstein Medical School started. That they only give grades.
No, so I give grades. I just don't give tests. So the point is that the more often you evaluate somebody, the more accurate. It's hard for people to hear, right? We'll just wait for a second.
It's okay.
Okay. But it's easy for you. You're able to hear it. But just in case somebody's missing. Okay. So the more often you test, the more accurate a picture you have of the student. And the student also is empowered to improve. So there's this question in the Gemara, how often are people tested? How often are we judged? So we're familiar with once a year on Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, right? That's what we're familiar with. But the truth is that we know that there are other opinions, right? Another opinion is, Rav Yossi says that it's each day. And the opinion of, who was the other opinion?
Rav Chisda.
Rav Chisda, no, it's not Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda is talking about something else. Rav Yossi says it's each day. And then there's another opinion that it's each moment. So we have three opinions. Either... once a year, each day, or each moment. What we call it in physics, we would call it instantaneous velocity. Right? How are you right now? So the Gemara says the following thing. Amar Rabbi Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef says, Kiman matzlinan ha'idna, why is it that we daven akitziri v'amari'i on people who are sick, they're weak, they need strength. So Rashi says that it refers to either people who are actually sick or Talmidei Chachamim, because the classical Talmid Chachamim is always learning, stays up all night, and they get sick, they get mono, and they get colds, and they're weak, they're frail. So why is it that we daven for these people, right? If it's middle of the summer, right? It's the middle of Av. There's no reason to daven. They're going to have Rosh Hashanah and Kippur coming up. What's the purpose? Whatever's happening now was already decided years the beginning of the year, right? So why do we daven? So what would you answer to this question?
First of all, we don't know what was decided.
Okay, but whatever was decided was already decided. Why are you daven?
Well, we know that God can change his mind.
Oh, so you say Hashem changes his mind. Well, let me ask you, if Hashem changes his mind, so then what's the purpose of the judgment on Rosh Hashanah?
No, it's not that Hashem changes his mind. That there's a reason why Hashem changes his mind. Because the person did something to improve themselves or did something that wasn't so good.
So what's the... Okay, so the same question. So what's the value of the judgment if it's flexible afterwards?
No, it's flexible, but if you don't do anything, that's your judgment.
Well, if you don't do anything, then you're the same. What's the difference? I'm asking.
You're asking another question, really. You're asking a question on the Rambam.
What about the Rambam?
The Rambam, when he explains Ma'aveh Rishon Rishon.
Okay.
Talks about him dropping the first of the misdeeds.
Okay.
And then judging from that point on.
Okay.
Okay. Now, what happens is if unless you are judged infinitesimally, Okay, all the time. That thing changes. That Mahavir Rishon Rishon changes constantly. You know, if you take an old lady across the street, you get one good mark. If you drop her in the middle, you get a bad mark.
That's true. Hashem judges our deeds, our action, very much focused on action.
Okay, so what do we judge? You're asking a better...
I'm asking the question. This is the fundamental question of our Gemara. If judgment is flexible, right? How I am today is not the same as I was yesterday, right?
Right.
We're not static beings. So what's the purpose of the judgment if it's going to be flexible? So the Gemara says, and therefore the corollary of that question is, what's the purpose of davening for something? If something's decided already, you know, I daven for things all the time, right? We say tefillah. Somebody emailed me last night. Their father was just diagnosed with prostate cancer, Rachman Litzlam. Okay? So actually what our learning is going to be a refuah shlema for that person. So that was already decided on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, right? So what are we davening for? What are we trying to accomplish? Intuitively, we say, of course we're trying to accomplish something. But on the other hand, we also know that there was a judgment. So what's going on? So that's our Gemara's question. The Gemara gives two answers. This is Rabbi Yosef's question. So he says, why do we daven? Kiman, Rabbi Yosef. Because we hold that judgment is not on Rosh Hashanah. We hold our contemporary practice, right? The Gemara says, Ha'idna. Our practice is that we daven. Why? Because we think that judgment is every day, like the opinion of Rabbi Yosi, not like the opinion of the Rabbanan, who hold that it's just at the beginning of the year, right? The other opinion is Rabbi Nassim. Rabbi Nassim is the one who says that it's each moment. So we hold like Rabbi Yosi, or I would add also like Rabbi Nassim. And that's why we daven each day. We daven because we know that things are flexible, because it's instantaneous velocity.
There is no decree on a final decree?
So there's no there's always a final decree, but the final decree is a short-term final decree. It's for a day, according to Yossi. It's for a moment, according to Nassim.
You have a real problem.
That's the point.
No, I'm saying any rabbi I've ever heard...
We have not been talking to Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Nassim enough. Yeah, we have to bring them into our conversation. This is not like a way out. It doesn't mean that things are less important. On the contrary, it means that we're judged more frequently. We have to be better more often.
Then what's the whole business with Yom Kippur and Hoshana Rabbah and all that?
Oh, exactly correct. So according to Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Nassim, Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah are not as significant in terms of judgment as other moments. I mean, they're still Yom Tovim. Yom Kippur is still a Zman of Kapara. That's true. Rosh Hashanah is still a Zman of Malchus Shemayim. But in terms of judgment and in terms of Gemardin, they're not as significant as otherwise.
In Yom HaDin then would be... irrelevant.
You wouldn't say Hinei Yom HaDin according to Rabbi Nassim. He said Hinei Yom HaDin. Right, according to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Nassim, you don't say Hinei Yom HaDin. Yes? What's that? Yes?
Whatever it is, we don't pass through Rabbi Yosef.
I don't know.
We say it's Tshuva, Tfilah, Ma'avir, and Esrei HaGzeira.
Right.
We say that on Yom Kippur.
So,
and on Rosh Hashanah too.
Yeah, I know Rosh Hashanah.
According to this stage in the Gemara, but we still daven for things in the middle of the year. How do you?
That's
the Gemara's question, right? So at this point, the Gemara is assuming that we downplay the judgment of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, not the holidays, not the value. Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah is still Zman of Malchus Shemayim, and Yom Kippur is still Zman of Kapara, but they're not Zmanim of Din per se. Right? That's the first answer to the Gemara. Viba is Ema. The Gemara gives a second answer. And I think somebody mentioned something like this before. Viba is Ema. L'olam k'rabbana. Now, we paskin like the Rabbana that the individuals are judged on Rosh Hashanah and the Gemara din is on Yom Kippur. However, we follow the other opinion of Rabbi Yitzchak. Ukir Rabbi Yitzchak. To Rabbi Yitzchak, what does Rabbi Yitzchak say? Yafet z'aka l'adam ben kodam gzmardin ben achi gzardin. He says that tefillah, tzaka, right? Tzedakah is not exactly the same as tefillah. We'll talk about it a little bit more later. But crying out to Hashem and all that goes together with that, of tshuva and all the other parts, so that's effective both before Hashem makes a decision on Yom Kippur, and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and after. So Hashem could have decided one thing, let's say, for Misa on Yom Kippur, and you call out. I mean, their Tanakh is filled with stories like this, that tefillah overrides the Gemara did. So you there is still judgment on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. That's the judgment for the year. And you're not reevaluated each day in the same way as Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is. However, you are, you have an opportunity to override it. Michael, are you able to hear me?
Excellent.
You are? Okay.
I also discriminated very well.
Yeah, me too. Because I'm on my good side.
Oh, okay, good. I'm glad we're placed properly for the acoustics. Okay, I just wanted to make sure. Okay, so according to the second opinion of the Gemara, that's probably what we do, right? We hold our din is on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, right? But you can still override it, right? Then we daven all the time for things, right? Constantly, we're always davening, right? I think Nachman of Breslov was literally davening like always. He used to just always be davening.
It's like Microsoft Word. We can edit our essay.
It's like Microsoft Word. I don't think he would have made that connection.
Somebody once showed me the sit. I don't know. I remember as a kid, somebody showed me the siddur of that the Ari used, the tefillah.
Yeah.
And if he went through that siddur, he must have davened practically the entire day, I would think.
Right. So the Ari siddur, which I'm not so familiar with, has.
I've seen it.
You're talking about Kavanas Ari. Which is not that the word
he davened for hours and hours.
He probably did
with Kavana.
It was the Arizal. The Arizal has in his it's not his own sitter, but it's based on his writings. He didn't write a sitter, but they're called Kavanos Ha'ari. When you say the Tfilos, what is like the deeper meaning of this? And there, it's just like poetry. It has to be understood in its context. The more you know about the context and the environment of tefillah, the more you can understand the depths of the tefillah. Now, Rizal has a lot of background. Kavanas Ha'ari is called. Yeah, he probably davened for a very long time. Okay, let's continue. You can say, yeah.
I once heard this, I don't know exactly how, but I got it right, that Rav Soloveitchik, when he davens, what does he concentrate on? Al Perush HaMilos. What the words mean.
Right. He was not a student of the Arizal.
Very high, lofty thought.
I think that's true. He was not a student of the Arizal. Yeah.
No.
Usually the words mean what you want them to accomplish.
But you understand also that his understanding of Perush HaMilos was much deeper than ours, and I'll prove it to you.
I'm not too
you
sure.
You read his books. And you see what he says about no, but you see you see what
doctor,
but you see what he says about tefillah. And you see how he explains it and how much he gets out of one word. It's like a nutshell he crack open. That was his Perush HaMilos. He's like, that's just what it means.
Yeah, well.
You just don't know. And I'm going to teach you.
That's
what I heard. Yeah, I'm sure that's true. That sounds like something he would say. Okay, so let's continue the Gemara. Okay, so we'll remember that our Mishnah told us that the world is judged at 4 points in the year. On Pesach, we're judged for grain. On Shavuos, we're judged on fruits. Right. On Rosh Hashanah, we're judged as people. And on Sukkot, we're judged for water. Okay. So there are three agricultural judgments and one personal judgment. Okay? Yes?
I don't know. It gets very complicated.
That's why we're here. I love that. Yes. Yes, it's complicated.
No, I forget the davening itself. I think on Yom Kippur, we say that if a person he makes tshuva, miyati kabloi. No matter, he could be on his deathbed.
That's
correct.
Miyati kabloi.
And actually, I think the Gemara Mishnah says, misa mechaper, chupa mechaper. There are various things that are mechaper.
That's true. That's okay. So that's a little bit different. That's kapara, which is something else, and is also I don't know that it's directly related to din. they're very connected, but I don't think it's direct. Like, once you have kapara, therefore you don't. Therefore you don't have din. I don't think those things are directly related.
The judgment is the judgment, and the kapara is the kapara.
Right, I think
they're
that's
two very different things.
They're related because if you're a tzaddik, so then
I'm not in the rabbinic shalayim accounting. Right, so kapara, I don't know exactly, but
kapara,
what's what.
Kapara is for Hashem. Kapara is something very specifically related to Hashem. It's not the same as onshim. It's not the same as din. I think they're different. Let's see what happens next in the Gemara. This is really good. We want to pay attention to this. Okay. Tanya. Do we all have it?
Yeah.
Yeah? Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Mishum Rabbi Akiva. So Yehuda is quoting Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yehuda was one of the, I mentioned on Tishba, was one of the five students of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi, he was one of the Tamidosenu, Tamidenu, Shebedaro, something like that. The five, one of the five students of Rabbi Akiva. So Yehuda is quoting his Rabbi, Rabbi Akiva. Neima. Why is it that we bring carbon omer on the second day of Pesach? What's the reason? Because Pesach is the time that the tzvuah is judged, right? It's also the time that you're about to get ready to harvest the grain. So what? Now listen very closely to the language. So God said, Hiviu lefanai Omer b'Pesach, bring a carbon Omer on Pesach, which is a carbon made out of barley. Kidei, so that shetisparach lechem tzvua shevesados. So the grain in the field will be blessed. Again, so he says, why do you bring a carbon Omer? Because we know that on Pesach, because we know that Pesach is man, the time that, that we're judged on grain. So we have a carbon in order to effectuate a better judgment. What does this mean? Meaning, the grain is one of the four major things that we're judged on, because grain is what we live on, it's our staple. So, we need an opportunity to connect to the realization that din is happening. We need an opportunity to do tshuva. We need an opportunity to recognize that Hashem is judging us and that Hashem is in control. Hashem gave us that opportunity at the time that we most specifically needed it, since Pesach is a time of judgment, therefore bring the Omer today. That's what he's saying. And that's why it's made out of barley. That's why it's grain. Right? It's a simple grain. Barley is a very simple grain. And you bring it as a carbon on Pesach in order to do all those things. The simple explanation of the Gemara, which I kind of skipped, but it's assumed, is that also you need an extra zechus, an extra merit. So we have an extra merit in order so that we can have a good din. But it's much deeper than that. You get the extra merit at the time that you need it so that you can elevate yourself. And thereby, Hashem will recognize you in that way. Yes?
There's no relationship. The judgment in Tishrei is for an individual. Right?
The judgment in Tishrei is for the individual, correct?
The judgment on Pesach is for a community.
I don't know if that's true. I mean, I don't know that's true on two levels. First of all, Rosh Hashanah is not just for individuals, it's also for communities. It's both, right? That's what Rambam says, right? Right? It's not just for people, it's also for countries. Remember he talks about the countries?
Yeah, okay, but that's... But we're talking about Rosh Hashanah.
That's what he's talking about, Rosh Hashanah.
Zachreinu L'chaim is an individual thing.
It's both.
Oh.
It's both. So that's one. And secondly, the judgment on grain, I don't know that it's either for an individual or for a community. It's both. Probably for both. I mean, my personal grain crop is going to be dependent on what everybody else's grain crop is. The same time, right? Remember we told the story from Warren Brachos? Remember we told that story last week about the guy who went to sleep in the cemetery, right? That sometimes one person can be excluded from the din of everybody else.
But wait a minute. That only works if you're a farmer.
Well, we're talking about agricultural society. Yes, that's true.
But not everybody was a farmer.
If the farmer doesn't have it, the other people don't either.
Right. When we talk, you're correct. You're correct. That is true. It's much more direct if you are a farmer and you plow
the
land.
The widow is plural. Al chet shechatanu, not al chet shechatatim.
That's true. That's true. I mean, we do both. We do both.
I just said, you know, if the farmer doesn't
David,
have
even
it,
though
the people don't have it.
Not everyone is a farmer, the people who aren't farmers also need farms? success for the crop because they're going to be using it.
You know, we can argue this forever, but not necessarily. For instance, talk about the United States, just because I know what's going on. Okay.
You do?
Oh, no, what's going on in this country? Nobody has any idea what's going on there. But you have a drought in one area, and you have a surplus in another area.
Okay.
The one who is a farmer and he's stuck in the drought is stuck in the drought. The one who's in the surplus, he's had a great year. He's had a great year.
Right. That's
and somebody who's not a farmer doesn't make any difference. He can import.
Doesn't make a difference.
So,
of course it makes a difference.
I mean, all these prices go up. Right.
And they pay more money if it's scarce.
So that's if there's you know, we live. It's true. We feel much more stable because we are living in the richest time in history. Right. We are so fabulously wealthy. All of us are so fabulously wealthy even all of us as a society. If you minimum wage for you work 1 hour, you can buy 10 pounds of flour. 5 pounds of sugar, 6 bottles of oil for working for 1 hour at minimum wage.
Not at $15.
Though. It's not healthy. What's that?
Not at $15.
For $15, you can buy 3 bags of flour, two bags of sugar, you can get a gallon of oil,
and you
listen to what people used to do. I mean, my grandfather left Romania because they were starving. They didn't have food, so he left. Right? That's what it was 100 years ago. People were... It's everything changed after World War One, and after especially during World War Two and on. So, we don't feel destabilized. We don't feel susceptible because, as a society, we are incredibly wealthy, and that's absolutely true. And that's what makes Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Tshuva and all these things very difficult for us, because it. As a society, yes, and it's part of the American culture. It's American.
As an American, as a country, we were more well.
There are a lot of poor guys around. I'm sure.
I'm not saying that there aren't people who are struggling. Of course there are people who are struggling, and of course we need to help support them. But you can't compare poverty today to poverty 100 years ago.
No.
Yeah.
They're not the same at all. No. It's just not the same.
It's probably true that people, no one is starving from hunger in the U.S. That's probably true.
In the United States?
Yeah.
That's
probably true.
People were self-supportive.
People were self-supportive. Everything was localized. There was no globalization. There was, the infrastructure was still simplistic. Of course. I mean, look what happened. In Ireland, they didn't have potatoes. What happened? Millions of people died. Some of them came to the United States. Those are the lucky ones who survived. Other people just died.
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
That's so we don't feel that. We don't understand that.
You go right to the Chumash.
I'm saying you don't have to go back 3,500 years. You can go back 100 years, and people were still susceptible to that. So this is as a society, as individuals, this makes it difficult for us to understand. But that doesn't mean that it's not true. God still controls it in minutiae as well. Try it when you want to understand the theory of this Gemara, what it's coming. You have to think back to that type of society. And you should know, like in 2/3 of the world, like it's still like that. Right? In Africa, like they just don't have
parts of Africa.
They just don't have water. It doesn't rain, they don't have water.
Yeah, well, that's
right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And rain also.
Yeah, and they don't grain, they don't have water, they don't have energy, they don't. They just, and you can't just go get it. There's just no water. That's it. The well is dry.
You don't have to go that far. You go to Russia.
You can go to Russia. It's South America. It's Africa. It's Asia. It's
you want to go to Russia?
It's Central America.
You're starving in Russia every day.
Oh, I thought you wanted to go to Russia.
I don't want to go to Russia.
Okay, let's continue.
I've been there.
Let's continue. Umipneima, second to last of the thin lines. Second word on the line. Mipnei ma, Amar Torah v'yushteh alechem batzeres. Why did the Torah tell us to bring the carbon shteh alechem on Shavuos? Mipnei she'atzeres man peiros ilon, because that's the time of the fruits. What does it mean that Shavuos is the time of the fruits? What does that mean?
Harvest.
Not the harvest of the fruits. Before that, what does it mean?
Tree.
What do we say about Shavuos and the trees? What did our Mishnah say? Yeah? That that's the time that we're judged about the fruits of the tree, right? So because Shavuos is the time that we're judged by the fruits of the tree, therefore, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu v'ilfanei shtei lechem batzeres, so bring that carbon of shtei lechem on Shavuos, kadesh yisparuch hu lechem peiros ilan, so that I'll give you a good judgment.
What's the connection? I mean, I can understand the connection between the omer, which is a type of grain, and being judged on all grains.
Great question.
What is
the shtei lechem? That's bread. That should have been on Pesach.
No, shtei lechem is also fruit.
And that's true, but it's also grain.
Yeah, but it's also fruit. In fact, one of the days is that...
Say what you want to say, yeah.
That Adam HaRishon got...
That the Eitz Hadas was made out of wheat.
Yeah.
Excellent. Very good. Let's go to that. Okay, let's look at the bottom Rashi. Rashi asked this question.
Maybe lechem is symbolic of all of food.
It is. It is. But yes, that's true. But there was a separate judgment on grain. So you need a very strong connection. It's true. It's true.
Lechem
is a general thing. Right. But you have to build a strong connection between lechem and peiros if you're going to break free of the...
I'm stupid. If I had read the Rashi, I wouldn't know the answer.
Right. The way we think of peiros and of bread as grain. Okay, let's see. Okay, let's look at the bottom Rashi. Shtei lechem. So Rashi says, what's the connection? Yirtua peiros ilan, the karma shtei lechem, is a form of prayer. The word yirtua is a form of prayer, favor. That really means prayer. Al peiros ilan, for the fruits of the tree, shei matirin lahavi bikurim, because when you bring the shtei lechem on Shavuos, that's when you can start bringing bikurim, and bikurim, right, the new fruits, so that represents all of the fruits of the tree. Okay, shei mivim bikurim kol matzaras tichsiv, because you can't bring bikurim before Shavuos tichsiv bikurim kitzir chitim, when you at the very beginning when you start cutting the wheat. Shavuos time, that's when you start bringing the Bikurim to the base of English. Oh, so what does Rashi say? We just built a very strong connection between the Chitim, the wheat of the Shtei Lechem, and fruits directly. So we have that connection, okay? So Rashi has a suggestion that we have a connection between wheat and fruits. What's the connection? What's the connection between wheat and olives? Well, when you cut the wheat, so then you can start bringing the olives to the Beis HaMikdash for Bikurim. So the experience of fruit really starts on Shavuos. And not just on Shavuos, it starts with the wheat of Shavuos. That's Rashi's first interpretation. Let's see his second interpretation. Vani Shamati, he says something unbelievable. Rabbi Yehuda Letamei, Rabbi Yehuda is following his other Shita. What's Rabbi Yehuda's other Shita? Ta'az l'kaman da'amra b'Sanhedrin, found the opinion that the one says in Rekiva, when Adam and Chava ate from the Eitz Hadas, so we know, what was it? So we don't know exactly what it was, but we know that it wasn't
an apple.
It wasn't an apple.
No,
he did not eat an apple.
We know it wasn't an apple.
What was it? We don't know. What are the options? Well, there are the Gemara and Sanhedrin gives a lot of options. Figs, esrog, grapes, wheat.
You can't eat esrog.
You don't eat the outside. You eat the
inside. A treat?
What? Jelly, so no, what the Gemara says that eitz, when it says eitz hadas, doesn't have to be that it grew on a tree. And the Gemara's interpretation
Peter,
why
that's rogin with sweet.
Why it would be each one. What's that?
Affected the nature.
So the Gemara explains why it's referred to as an eitz if it's like something like chita, which doesn't grow well, three pre-eitz, right? But either way, that's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda over there. So what's he saying? He's saying that what's the connection between wheat and pre-eats, right, the fruit? Oh, you see that wheat is referred to as a fruit, right? Why? Because the fruit of the Eitz Hadas was wheat. So you think that wheat is considered with the Tevua part, right? That's what you probably thought, right? That's what we all thought. No! Wheat is not considered part of the grain. Wheat is considered a fruit, just as a mushel. What does that mean that wheat is considered a fruit? I'll give you a mushel.
What roughly do you say?
No, it's still mazonos. This is not, it's still mazonos. But I'll give you a mushel of what, how could something that looks like wheat be a fruit? I'll give you a mushel. Quinoa, right? Quinoa, which we all know and love.
Really?
Except for Sam.
And me.
And David. We'll take a vote later. So, quinoa. What is quinoa?
A seed.
I don't know.
So,
it's a seed of the grass.
So it's a berry. It's a berry.
It's a berry.
Technically, it's a berry. But when my wife's a dietitian. So she talks to her. She's a dietitian at Columbia, and she counsels people, yada, yada, yada. Now, some people can't eat grains for all different reasons, either for celiac, all these different things. But quinoa, in some ways, functions as a grain. Like, you could just eat quinoa instead of wheat and barley, and you'd be just fine. It has a very similar properties to the grains that
where
we eat.
Where do you buy it?
In the store, comes in a bag.
As a hechsher.
So what do you see? You can have something that's treated like a grain, which is not a grain at all. Now, you wouldn't eat quinoa as a berry. Like, you don't have yogurt with your quinoa on top, because it doesn't taste like a berry. It doesn't function like a berry, but it can still be a berry. Like, you know, and the same thing. Cucumbers are technically a fruit. Like, we know these things. And, like, the point is, so you can tell me that you eat your cucumber as a vegetable, right? You put it in your vegetable salad, and you're trying to get 5 vegetables a day, your cucumbers, and still say at the same time that it's categorized as a fruit. You could say the same thing for wheat. You could say that wheat is Borrelia mizonos. Mm-hmm. It's mizonos, even though it's also called Paris ula.
Tomatoes
are fruit, yeah. The history of tomatoes in the modern world is fascinating. Not for now. We all know, everybody knows that tomatoes were considered poisonous until the early 1900s.
Really?
People used to go to state fairs and eat tomatoes, and like that was the whole thing. You would go, and like you would, not like they would sell tomatoes at the state fair. The show was you would watch somebody eat a tomato to see if they would die. Because they thought that all nightshades were poisonous. That's what he used to do.
This may be a joke. I heard it from my father, Olav Ashalom, that in Poland they would refer to tomatoes as the trifina apple. Because it's bloody. Because it's bloody.
Interesting. Okay.
It was right.
I hear where they're coming from. Okay. So I think it's a very interesting thing. I'm thinking about giving a drasha about this Rashi. When I saw this Rashi, I was struck. It's unbelievable, the connection between Shavuos and Rosh Hashanah. That you bring Shteil Lechem not Rosh Hashanah, about the connection between Eitz Hadas, Parshas Bereishis, and Shavuos. It's just and the Eitz Hadas and Adam Lechava and we. It's just unbelievable. I was floored by this Rashi. I don't know what I'm going to say about it yet. Maybe we'll do a drasha deconstructed on it.
I wonder if you can refer to chita as a priya age. That's beyond me.
That's what I'm saying. It can look like a vegetable, and you can eat it as a vegetable. You can count it as one of your 5 vegetables, like a cucumber, and it can still be a fruit, like the tomato.
Well, you have to eat 5 vegetables a day.
I don't know, whatever.
What are you, a dietitian now?
I had a talk with my wife about this.
He listens to his wife. He doesn't.
I had a talk with my wife. 5 fruits and vegetables a day, and you're good. You're doing well. You're doing well. If you do 5 total, even if they're all 5 fruits, you're doing well. You really want to push at least 1, 2, they really say 3 vegetables a day. You do 5 total between fruits and vegetables, and you're doing all right. Because part of the reason it's so important to eat vegetables and fruits is because it displaces a lot of unhealthy food. If you eat 5 fruits and vegetables a day, the likelihood that you're eating a whole tub of ice cream goes down. Just because you're full from all the... You're full from all the... That's true. That's true.
I invite you to my house for steak and potatoes.
Yeah. So that's another good example. My wife considers potatoes... to not be a vegetable. She says a peeled potato is a starch. An unpeeled potato is a starchy vegetable. Okay, go figure. Why? Because in nutrition,
you should just eat
the peel. Right, I feel like it'd be really good deep fried. Okay, let's continue.
Isn't a potato is underground?
No, I don't think it's healthy, but it sounds delicious.
It may taste good. But.
Yeah.
What are you eating?
Okay, we're on the first.
What did you say you're eating?
I'm saying frying.
I suggested frying potato peels and deep frying them.
Too healthy because fried foods are not healthy.
Right, right. It's like, you know, like you buy those potato chips with the skin still on and you think it's healthy. Yeah. They're still potato chips.
Right.
Okay, we're in the first wide line. Why does the Torah tell us to do Nisach HaMayim on Sukkos? Nisach HaMayim was when the water was poured on the Mizbeach. Amakarish Baruch Hu, Hashem said, Nischu lefanai mayim b'chag, Kedeshus Baruch Hu gishmei hashana. Because you're being judged on Sukkos for the rain, so bring this karban, and then you'll do tshuva, and you'll be elevated, and I'll judge you well. Okay, now the next part of the Gemara is very famous. V'imru lefanai b'rosh hashanah. Now, it was just as we read it, it's very important to remember, just to read it as a continuation. This is the fourth component of the Braisa, right? We did the Karban Omer, Karban Shteh Alechem, Nisach HaMayim, those are the first three components. Now the next part. Vimru Lefanai, B'Rosh Hashanah, Malchios Zichronos V'Shofros, and say in front of me, Malchios Zichronos V'Shofros, on Rosh Hashanah and Shmon Esrei, Malchios, why? Kedei Shetam Lichuni Alechem. So that, you say Malchios, so that you can coronate me, or to declare my kingship above you. Zichronos, Kadesh Yal Zichronechem, Lefanai the Torah. You say Zichronos so that your consideration and your remembering will be good in front of me. Hashem says, Uma, how do you do that? Ubima, how do you do that? Bishofar. Right? So it's Malchus Zichronos. How? Bishofar. The shofar is how you do the other two. It's like the tool that the other two use. Yeah, so what I think is so interesting about this, and that it reads similar to how we were reading the first three components of the Braisa, is that, what do we say? What's the reason that we have the Karban HaOmer on Pesach? Because since we're being evaluated, we want to make ourselves worthy. Not just that we want an extra merit. It's more than that. We want to elevate ourselves, so when Hashem is considering us, Hashem's telling us, I'm looking at you, so we want to stand up straight. So that's what this is. When on Rosh Hashanah, it's a time that God is coronated. Why? Because it's the time that the world is created and all different types of things. And it's a time that we're considered, which is we're evaluated, we're judged. So at that point, you want to look your best because you want to be your best. Hashem says, I want to set you up. Going back to education, there's a concept in education called setting up for success. Meaning, there are, like, let's say you have a difficult student. So you can take this student and say, you know, the test is next week, right? You know when it is. And here's what you need to do. Go do it. Student comes to college. First day in college, you give them a list of these are the courses you have to take. I'll see you in 4 years, right? I hope you make it off well, right? That's the standard model. What's been introduced in the last couple of decades is the concept of setting up for success. And what that means is there's a recognition that when you give students, little young students or older students, just huge leeway and flexibility, they don't do well with that. Because you say, here's the material, test is next week, I'll see you with the test. Many of the students won't do well on that test. Because you didn't check in with them over time and things like that. They need help. You want to set them up for success. This is a huge problem in the city colleges, that students come in and they start going, and then 2 years into their schooling they drop out. And it is to this day, it's a huge problem.
Now when we went to city college.
I know, I'm saying now it's a huge problem in college. In colleges in general, but the city colleges are especially problematic. This,
city colleges, so, students aren't prepared for college.
So part of the issue is that's exactly the. So why don't you say, okay, so here's the consequence: you're unprepared for college, you're not going to graduate.
But you don't go.
Or you don't go. But the problem is that you want the students to be successful if they're there. So the concept is you set them up for success. How do you set them up for success? It means you evaluate them when they come in. You see where they're strong. Yeah, but it's different now. They meet regularly with mentors, faculty members, mentors, to make sure that they're on track. if they see that they're falling behind, so they have to pull back on their coursework. They counsel, there's count. I mean, throughout the process, you don't just wait.
So you still have the dropout rate?
So different schools have different dropout rates. CUNY actually, I mentioned City College, but CUNY actually is actually doing very good work. There was just an article in the Times, I think, a week or two ago.
I never met any of those people when I went to CUNY.
They weren't there when you were at CUNY. But CUNY's doing very good work with this. Their dropout, their graduation rate is significantly higher than many of the similar colleges. But you have to set them up for success. So that's what Hashem is doing. Hashem said, I'm judging you today. I want to set you up for success. I want to give you the tools that you can make yourself as good as you can be, as worthy as you can be. What is that? Malchus Zichronos and Shofros. Kadesh Yitam V'chuni Aleichem. Today, She'yal Zichyosein L'fan of the Tova. With what? With Shofar. Okay. Let's continue. Four lines from the bottom. Amar Ravo. Lama Token B'Shofar Shel Ayo. Why is it that we blow the shofar of a ram? Why is it a ram's horn, which is used for shofar? Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, very good. Take a lefan of a shofar shel ayo. Hashem says, Hashem says that you should blow a shofar of a ram. Kedesh Ezkor Lechem Akedas Yitzchak Ben Avram. So that I can remember Akedas Yitzchak, what did it add in? Ben Avram. Did anybody, if we just said Ben Akedas Yitzchak, would anybody been unclear which Yitzchak we're talking about? Akedah.
No.
Akedah, we don't call Akedas Yitzchak Ben Avram.
That's not the Gemara's making a point.
What's the point? That's my question. What's the point?
You're not only asking for the squiyot of Yitzchak for getting himself almost chopped apart, but also the schus of Avram who was tested.
Mm. Very good. I think that's correct. I think we're doing it's a tool. It's a dual zechus. It's Akedas Yitzchak, but Akedas Yitzchak was one of the nisyonos of Avraham. Also, we want the zechus of the father and of the son, the Jewish ones, Avraham and Yitzchak. So that's what we're saying. Umal and Yalechem, and I will grant you as if keilu ikadtem atzmechem lefanai, as if you yourself were bound, meaning us, as if we ourselves are bound. And the truth is that that's a double ke'ilu. Because even Akedas Yitzchak, Yitzchak wasn't actually sacrificed, right? But the Medrash says that the ashes of Yitzchak are tziburin, are piled. The Fnei Hashem l'olam. Hashem always considers Yitzchak's ashes. Yitzchak's ashes? What was that talking about? Yitzchak was never burnt.
The ram.
Not referring to the ram. What's it referring to? It's as if, because what was Yitzchak willing to do? What was the purpose? The goal was Yitzchak to be brought as a carbine. And Hashem says, I consider as if it happened. And not only that, Hashem says, if we connect to that, we hold on to that, so then we can also be considered as if we're willing to do that.
Maybe there's an alternate reality.
The Baal HaKedah says something like that, an alternate reality.
What a philosophical problem this creates.
Yeah. You know, it reminds me of a story. There's a great story of the Blue of a Rebbe. This is my favorite story. Listen to this story. Chevra, listen to this story. So the Blue of a Rebbe, I'll find it for you. The Blue of a Rebbe, the Blue Shiva Rebbe, there's a book about him called Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust by Eliach.
Oh, that's what I know.
And Yaffa Eliach. In this book, there's a beautiful story that one of the games of the Nazis was that they the Jews would be lined up along a pit. And they would be told to jump over the pit. And there's this huge pit. I mean, everybody was expected to fall in. And the Nazis told this Jewish community that if you make it over the pit, then we'll let you live. If you don't make it over the pit, so then we're not going to let you live.
That was that?
This is the story. I don't know. I don't remember. I have to check up the details. But this is the person involved is the Blue Shiva Rebbe, the previous Blue Shiva Rebbe, and the Luz Rebbe says he was standing at the side of the pit, and he closes his eyes, and he jumps over, and he lands on the other side. He made it, however far it was. I don't know how many feet it was. He lands on the other side of the pit, and of the trench, and he looks around, and next to him, somebody also made it, but most of the people never fell in, and they were killed. And he, the person turns to the Blues Rebbe and said, "How did you make it over the pit?" So Blues Rebbe says, "I closed my eyes and I held on to the merits, the zechuyos of my father, my grandfather, my great grandfather, the Rebbes of Chassidus. And I held on to the zechuyos and I jumped and the zechuyos carried me over." And he turns to this other guy. He says, "How did you make it over?" He says, "I was holding on to you." I was holding on to you. What does that story mean? It's an unbelievable story. What does that story mean? I mean, the tragedy of the story is so overwhelming. The hope of the story, what is the kernel of hope in that story? What does it mean? So it means that sometimes we can so transform ourselves and elevate ourselves through our connections, not to values directly, but our connection to people of values, right? The Blues Rebbe, he had these lofty goals and these ideas, and he jumped over. And the other day I was holding onto your coat, and he was carried with that. I think as a mashal, that's what's going on over here. Mm-hmm. We are connecting to who? To Yitzchak. Yeah. We can't be worthy on our own. We can't be good on our own. We can't be found as true tzaddikim to be judged with as l'chaim on Rosh Hashanah. So what we do is we find the things that we can hold on to. What outlet are we going to plug into? And we don't need to do the whole thing. As long as you're plugged in, we plug into Yitzchak on Rosh Hashanah. Plug into the person of value. And I think that as a mashal, it fleshes out a little bit of this idea. Okay. Should we go on? Do you want to say something?
Yeah, what you said. Actually, we were brought up like this, that if anything is wrong, you have to take a penny or the money and put it in the push of
Mayor Balanes.
Mayor Balanes. And then you're going to get the push alone.
Interesting. So that's a similar idea. That Mayor Balanes, I don't know why he has a different name, but is Rabbi Mayor. Right? The student of Rabbi Akiva. Right? We learned about Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yehuda's student. Rabbi Akiva had five students. One was Rabbi Yehuda, one was Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Shimon, they had a couple of students.
I need to find out now about it.
Yeah.
Even if I was there next to a skater for years, I didn't know it's the same Rabbi
Meir. Yeah, that's Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir, who's quoted, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times in the Mishnah. That's Rabbi Meir Balanes. So there's a story about him with the Nace. Either way, but it's a similar concept that you feel, I'm personally not worthy. But there are so many great giants that I can grab onto who can inspire me. In the end, we have to do it on our own, right? You have to be worthy on your own. But you have to choose to be worthy by connecting to a chevra of people who are doing mitzvos, individuals who are doing mitzvos. Absolutely.
I have to tell you my coin story one day.
But how about right now?
What kind of story?
My coin story.
Okay.
In Vietnam, what happened? The survival of Vietnam. Before I went there, my stepfather, Cohen, took me to a rebbe, Satmeru. And Satmeru sit me down like this, and he looked in my eyes, and he saw right through me. He asked, why is he going, and all that. And then at the end, it was explained to him. You know, he didn't speak in English, but he gave me a coin, and he said, in Yiddish, he will come back. He gave me a coin. So I had this coin on my dog tags in Vietnam, and when there was a firefight, I held on to that. I also mugged do it there. I held on to it, and I only knew the Shema back then, and I said the Shema a few times, and I survived. You know, other people around me didn't all survive. So, an interesting part of all of that was that the day I was able to swap off those boats I was on, with some other idiot who wanted to see the, a battle. And the day I was carrying my orders, I lost a coin.
Really?
In a Mogendouit. That I was running after a truck to get a ride to personnel in Da Nang, and I lost a coin. And the only, and I went back to the same place and I looked through this disgusting red sand, red dust. I never found it. So years later, I wasn't 21 yet. It occurred to me that the moment I stopped needing the protection from the Rebbe, I lost the protection.
That's so interesting. So I would, I'm not a chassid, so I'm going to take your story and change it a little bit. Yeah. Not the moment you didn't need the protection of the Rebbe. The Rebbe wasn't protecting you. Hashem protects you.
Hashem protects
you. The moment that you didn't need to inspire yourself and through the Rebbe, to inspire yourself to be worthy of Hashem's protection, because you were going to a safer time, which is actually what we're going to talk about on the next Amud.
Yeah.
So that's when you lost. It's a very beautiful story.
So it's a story. It's happened, but only years later this all came to me. Then later I got another coin in the mail, and then I was just in Da Nang. I wasn't in any danger.
That's a very beautiful story.
I have another coin, not the original coin that was lost.
That's a very, very beautiful story.
Do you still have a second coin?
I think so, but I don't know where it is. But that wasn't given to me directly.
Okay, that's a very beautiful story. Let's do a little bit more. A little bit more. Two lines from the bottom. I'm Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak said, Rabbi Yitzchak's making a lot of, there's a lot of coverage this price in this Amud. Okay. Rabbi Yitzchak said, Lama Token Barash Hashanah, why do we blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah? So more ass. Lama Token, why do you blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah? Rachmana Ratiku. Because it's a mitzvah. What kind of question is that? What are you talking about? Ella Lama Ria. No, really, his question is, why do we blow a trua? Why do you blow a trua? Marian. Why do you blow a trua? Rachman Amar, the Torah says, Zichron trua. That you have to blow a trua on Rosh Hashanah. What kind of questions are you asking? Is this a quiz? Are you trying to catch us? Ella, what is Rabbi Yitzchak's real question? Lama token umarian, kishen yoshvin, why do you blow tkia and trua when we're sitting down in shul? The token marian, kishen omdin, and then blow again when we're standing up. What is this? This is called tkia stem uman. Sorry, the other one. Tkia stem yushav, it's tkia stem uman, right? We blow before musaf. Then we dive in Basaf and we blow again during Basaf, right? So the first one they call Tzkiyas Demiyushav, the sitting down sound, because you're allowed to sit down during those. We don't. But you could. You're allowed to. The other ones are during Musaf. Obviously you can't sit down during Musaf. You're old Musaf. So
when you're old and infirm.
Except, right. We make exceptions for that. So what's the reason that we blow shofar, both tkiya and trua, both before Musaf and during Musaf? Mar answer, the super, super famous answer. Kedei l'arbi v'satan. What does that mean?
Oh, to confuse the satan.
So everybody knows means to confuse the satan.
Yeah, I know that.
How does the word l'arbev mean to confuse?
So the word... Very stupid.
So the root, arav, means a mixture, like an erav. Right? So that's an English idiom. So I don't think it's what it means from over there. But it means like when things are all mixed in, you can't notice them, right? If you have red balls and green balls and you look, you can't pick out all the green balls if they're all mixed up. So that's what it means also. That's what it means over here. For some reason blowing shofar twice, that's la'arbi v'sata. It confuses them. What does that mean? So there's a really beautiful pshat in Rashi, which is not quoted as often as the other opinions, but I mean it's Rashi, so you have to see what he says. So let's look at this top Rashi. Kedei l'arbev, to overwhelm, to confuse him. Shelo yastin, so that he doesn't prosecute us. He doesn't accuse us. Like Satan is an accuser. He doesn't accuse us. Why won't he accuse the Jewish people if he hears the shofar? So we all know, right? What do we know? It sounds like Mashiach, right? Tosus quotes that. Okay. Let's see what Rashi says. Kishe Yishma Yisrael mechavin es hamitzvos mistatmin dvarav. When he hears the Jewish people blowing shofar extra, right? They already blew shofar. They're blowing it again. They love the mitzvah so much. He's like, whoa, The Jewish people really are worthy. He's not confused. He's overwhelmed because the Jewish people are so worthy. He can't accuse them of anything. It's not about the Satan. What's it about? It's about us. It's about us. We have to make ourselves worthy. That's what we mean. You do the mitzvah, you do it again. You do it again. It's not enough to do it once. We want to do it before Musaf and during Musaf and after Musaf. And that's what we do. Because two all these things, the pshat that Tosus quotes about Mashiach is very important pshat also. That's also true. But the main point of all these mitzvahs and all these tefillos that we say, they're about us. We need to elevate ourselves. We need to challenge ourselves. We have to lift ourselves up so that we connect to Hashem and that we're worthy through that process. It's about us. It's not, we're not relying on anything. It's not like, you know, you hold on to somebody else's coattails. It's, sometimes it is, but it's about us. You need to be worthy. Any questions on what we've learned so far?
It's a nice Rashi.
Isn't it beautiful, Rashi? This one, and also the one right before about the Shtei Lechem. Beautiful. This blot is jam-packed with beautiful Rashis. Now I'll just rip it out and take it with me. Okay. Any other questions? No. Okay. So we're going to stop over here.